Iran's leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, says the Islamic Republic will return to its nuclear commitments only if the U.S. lifts all of its sanctions first. A roadside bomb blast claimed by al-Shabaab militants kills at least a dozen security agents in central Somalia. And Iraqi Azadis hold a mass burial ceremony for their loved ones killed by Daesh terrorists in the northern town of Sinjar 7 years ago. Appreciate you being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran today, where the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Tehran will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all of its sanctions first. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the U.S. and its European signatories have violated their commitments under the deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Therefore, he added, the U.S. and Europe have no right to set any conditions on the accord. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that Iran has fulfilled all its obligations and has the right to set conditions on the JCPOA. Iran's leader made the comments in a meeting with Air Force personnel. Barry Grossman is an international lawyer, and he believes it is absurd that the U.S. expects Iran to go back to full compliance with the nuclear deal first because it was Washington that withdrew from the accord in the first place.
So I think the starting point here is that neither the JCPOA nor the position that's now being taken by Atlantic world nations, and I consider the United States and the European signatory nations to be equally complicit in this obvious breach, this illegal repudiation of the JCPOA. It's clear that this was not and is not about any genuine concern of Iran having a nuclear weapons program. The underlying concern is about resistance, about Iran's continuing resistance to submitting to Atlantic world governments, to Atlantic world social programs, to the recognition of Israel. The United States and other countries have made it perfectly clear that their concern is about Iran's perfectly legal missile program, that their concern is about Iran's refusal to recognize the legitimacy of Israel, and that their concern is about Iran's refusal to embrace Atlantic world foreign policy in the region.
Iranian medical experts have begun the clinical trial of another indigenously developed coronavirus vaccine. Covalparse is an inhalable vaccine developed using biotechnology. The tests of the vaccine have already been conducted successfully on animals, including guinea pigs, hamsters, and monkeys. The Covalparse vaccine has been developed by the Razi Institute, which is one of the most important medical research centers in West Asia. The launch of its human trial was announced in a ceremony in Tehran, attended by experts and officials. Addressing the gathering, Health Minister Saeed Namaki said the achievement is a source of national pride for Iran.
One of the major jobs done over the past few months was to rely on domestically developed technology to produce a vaccine. The COVID-19 vaccine is not a simple one to develop. As the virus, as the COVID-19 virus is a complex one, producing a vaccine for it is a very complex process.
The minister added it is not clear how effective the coronary vaccine developed by different countries are, but they are the only way available to help contain the disease. Iran has developed another COVID-19 vaccine called Coviran, which is under the first human trial phase. The volunteers who received the shot had no symptoms such as shock or fever after the injection. Masoud Soleimani, a vaccine trials expert at Iran University of Medical Sciences, has given us more details on the development process of the new Iranian coronavirus vaccine.
So they created the vaccine about in March last year, end of February, March last year. And then from March, they started their animal testing, first on mouse and hamster and rabbit. And then by almost end of May, start of June, they started testing it on monkeys. The green African monkey, which is very close to human race, they started testing on that monkey. And since then, until now, we have about 10 months of data, which shows that this vaccine is safe, created no harm on these 23 monkeys that right now they are alive and well. And also they created a long-standing immune response, which what we need in an effective vaccine. Today, we had basically announcement of the start of the human phase of this vaccine. One of the innovations in this vaccine is that it consists of another third dose. The first dose is when you is in the form of inoculation. So the second, it comes about 3 weeks after the first dose. Again, it's an injection, and then it comes a month later comes the nasal spray, which is an innovation, as I said, in this vaccine, because we have studies that shows that if the nasal basically immune response becomes activated, then the person will not be spread the virus, because one of the problems is that when you are immune against the virus, you don't get the virus, you are immune, you are healthy, but you may still spread the virus from nasal secretion.
Well, Europe continues to struggle with the coronavirus pandemic, with several countries on the continent reporting new deaths and infections. Russia recorded 432 deaths and over 16,000 cases, a slight drop from the previous day. Germany logged 231 deaths and 8,600 infections in 24 hours, down from the figures reported on Saturday. Elsewhere in Europe, the situation in the UK and the Netherlands remains grim. Dutch authorities reported more than 4,000 new cases, pushing its total caseload to 1 million since COVID was first detected there. Britain also reported more than 18,000 new infections and 828 deaths. The UK has the highest COVID-related deaths and the second highest infection cases in Europe. And now to Somalia, where a roadside bomb blast has killed at least a dozen security agents in the central part of that country. All those killed belong to the National Intelligence and Security Agency. The explosion took place outside a town where political leaders had met to resolve a row over how to choose a new president. The meeting held on Saturday ended without any agreement. Al-Qaeda linked Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for the blast. They have been engaged in bloody militancy in Somalia for over a decade now. Al-Shabaab seeks to overthrow the internationally backed central government and establish its own rule. Crossing over to New York and now talking to journalist and author Daniel Lazar. Thanks so much for being with us. Your perspective on what exactly is going on. On the one hand, they were meeting, political leaders were meeting to try to resolve an issue. On the other hand, we have at least a dozen of the security agents being killed. Who exactly, I mean, on the one hand, we talked about Al-Shabaab militants. Who profits from this type of action taking place, though, in Somalia, in your perspective?
Well, I suppose the most likely candidate would be the Saudis and the Gulf states, which are anxious to promote a Sunni fundamentalist war or uprising in order to benefit in Yemen and elsewhere in the region. That would be the likeliest culprit, but we have no evidence so far. But assuming it's the Al-Shabaab, then we know that Saudi money has flowed into their coffers. So it seems to be reasonable to suspect a Saudi link.
We have a new administration in Washington now, and we have at least verbally it has said, for example, it will not continue to support the Saudis' aggression in Yemen, to a certain degree. Your take on this, you're talking about the Saudis possibly being behind this. Do you think that the new administration, Biden, will put or want to put pressure on Saudi Arabia in general to stop funding these various terrorist groups or not?
No. I mean, I think the situation is very fluid and complex. The Yemen war has turned into a huge embarrassment for the United States, and of course, this is a war that was started not only by Obama but by Biden himself, and even his Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who flew to Riyadh a week after the war started to assure Mohammed bin Salman that he had America's support. So the Biden administration is deeply implicated in that war. Now it's trying to wind down the war, but wars are not always so easily wound down. And certainly, Saudi Arabia has many cards up its sleeve that it wishes to play, and funding for Al Qaeda and other such groups is one of those cards. And so, therefore, it's probably in the Saudi interest to foment violence in Somalia and violence by similar groups in Yemen, because Biden did specify that the U.S. would support military intervention in Yemen in order to contain al-Qaeda. So stirring up al-Qaeda is one way of ensuring that the U.S. will keep a finger in the Yemeni pie, and stirring up the similar forces in Somalia probably also accomplishes the same end.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us out of New York. Daniel Lazar, journalist and author. Moving on to other news now this hour. The first mass burial of Azadi Kurds killed by Daesh terrorists in a northern Iraqi town of Sinjar 7 years ago has been held in a local village. Amid tight security, relatives of the victims carried more than 100 coffins during the burial ceremony attended by official delegations and civil society organizations. Back in 2014, more than 3,000 Azadis were killed and nearly 7,000 Azadi women and girls were abducted and sexually abused by Daesh in northern Iraq. The United Nations denounced the onslaught as genocide. The first exhumations of mass graves began in March of 2019, led by a UN investigative team in collaboration with the Iraqi government. More than 80 mass graves have been discovered in the area, and 19 of them have been dug up so far. The European Organization for Human Rights has called for reopening the Sana'a International Airport. The rights group made the call at a press conference in the Yemeni capital. The event discussed the dire consequences of the continued closure of the airport and the siege imposed on the country by Saudi Arabia. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, reports.
Yemeni officials at the European Organization for Human Rights have held a press conference aimed at renewing calls for reopening Sana'a International Airport. The rights group affirmed that the continued closure resulted in more loss of lives, killing patients who can't travel for treatment.
The closure of Sana'a International Airport has exacerbated the human suffering, starting with the stoppage of airport workers who support their families and the inability of patients to travel for treatment, especially the elderly and children. This constitutes a real tragedy because patients are forced to travel to very remote governorates to reach an airport that works, and the roads are rough and deteriorate patients' condition.
The director of Sana'a International Airport said the closure is a major reason for the humanitarian crisis in the country, as it has turned the country into a prison, banning the patients from traveling for treatment.
The closure of Sana'a Airport turned Yemen into a large prison, which is a war crime because it led the country to a humanitarian catastrophe. The airport serves more than 11 governorates and is the only airport for these governorates. There are more than 100,000 patients who died because they were unable to travel for treatment, and there are still about 400,000 patients who are at risk of losing their lives, while some 25 to 30 patients die every day.
Yemenis have been suffering the world's worst humanitarian crisis since Saudi Arabia, backed by the U.S., launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 and imposed a siege that has fueled starvation in Yemen.
Human rights activists say that Sana'a Airport must be reopened to allow thousands of patients to get proper treatment as the first step to lift the siege imposed on the war-torn country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Several Palestinian rights organizations have reported the arrest of more than 450 people during different Israeli raids across the occupied West Bank in January. In a joint report, the organizations, including the Prisoners Affairs Commission and the Palestinian Prisoner Society, said 93 minors and 8 women were among those detained last month. That reportedly brings the number of Palestinians languishing in Israeli jails to some 4,500. Some of them are put under the regime's so-called administrative detention for up to 6 months without trial, which is extended to an unlimited period. Palestinian rights groups have decried the new Israeli detentions amid the coronavirus crisis. The report estimates over 350 Palestinian inmates have tested positive with COVID-19 in different Israeli jails due to the regime's deliberate medical negligence. Mona Kandil says Palestinian inmates face very difficult situations in Israeli jails, with hundreds of them contracting the coronavirus.
They are being held in a very difficult situation in Israeli jails and military centers. This is, of course, illegal according to the international laws, especially now with the spread of coronavirus, this pandemic. The prisoners, many of them were infected by COVID-19. Over 360 Palestinians were captured this pandemic from the Israeli jailers and from the Israeli guards. And they are not isolated. They don't receive medical care. They continue to face medical negligence by the Israeli military.
Well, people have taken to the streets across Myanmar to denounce a recent military coup that ousted the de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. People took to the streets in different cities, including the largest city, Yangon. Protests took place for a second day in a row. So far, the demonstrations have largely been peaceful. People want the release of Suu Kyi and other officials detained by the military. The army seized power on Monday over vote fraud in November general elections as Suu Kyi's party won by a landslide. It also announced a one-year state of emergency and put restrictions on the internet. Those restrictions have now been removed. The coup in Myanmar has drawn widespread international criticism. And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy. خاکم و سرزمین من همیشه جا به دانش و خاک امورای من قدم قدم غیرت شو غزل غزل آی بنو از ارتدا تا انتها مردمی از جنس برو
Salam, al-Mu'allim, al-Salam, 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 al-Salam see the world through IRIB English Radio, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Welcome back to Aperture, everyone. In the first part, we saw how Lorna Taichostu made her first trip to Iraq just before the start of the war to reveal the humanity of Iraq's citizens through her photojournalism. Consequently, her attempt to enlighten the American public turned to controversy as Fox News broadcasters called her efforts, quote, villainous and even bordering on treason, and accused her of aiding and abetting the enemy on the brink of war. But Lorna was never intimidated by such words. Instead, she continued her efforts to report stories that go beyond mainstream media coverage, and during her trips to Iraq, she endeavors to get as close to the people as possible and find her way to the ordinary people in the streets of Iraq. Well, stay with us for the second part of our documentary.
It appears that there were not weapons of mass destruction there.
You said you knew where they were.
I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were, and
you
we
said,
were just...
You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and northeast, south, and west of there. Those are your words.
We flew back, and we spent 6 weeks living in an unprotected hotel, talking to as many Iraqis as possible, traveling in taxi cabs and in people's cars, people who started to befriend us after a while. This particular camp kind of adopted me because I would keep going back. A lot of journalists go to Iraq, they get the sexy story, they go home, they write about it, they never go back. These people, I usually go visit everyone. I try and visit everyone I've spoken to, like, you know, different people who I've had conversations with on each trip to see how they're doing, get a recap. They invited me to their eldest son's wedding, and this was wild. I mean, we had my interpreter and I and the videographer arrived at this SWAT camp. All these women were all dolled up in this back room, and they put the Arabic music on, and they have the kerchiefs, and we're doing the dance, and we're just having like this blast. The Iraqi people are good-looking people. They love to look good. They're very fashionable. This is in a SWAT camp. These people are obviously very poor, but they're still, if they have only one set of clothes, they wash it every night. They go out, and they love to look good. Happiest when I'm there, you know, really, because you know you're doing your work. I feel like you're making some progress. You're helping the world a little bit.
Do you think this building needs some love?
Yeah.
It's a big surprise. He's 90 years old. He's still working.
I think of those young and old people who we've impacted each other. They've taught me so much about their culture, about life in Iraq. They've allowed me an insider's glimpse.
I really had a great day. You will never believe the miracle that happened. We were waiting for a taxi across the street from the hotel. Suddenly, this taxi rolled slowly over to us, as if by magic. And the guy driving was the man in the photo walking with crutches with one leg. And he remembered me taking his photo, so we made arrangements for him to come to the hotel and see his picture. Did you know that at the last minute, I grabbed my box of huge 20 by 24 photos? Yes, and I did have them here with me, and I can show people the photos. I gotta go now. My battery got fried yesterday when the electricity came on. I had no surge protector hooked to it. Much love to you, my sweetie. I'm missing you all the day long and talking to you in my heart. I miss you and love you very much. Love, Muma.
I have commando mommy photos, Liz.
Where?
I'm looking for them right now.
Commando.
We went over to Ala's house and they wrapped me in a...
I want to be your president for 4 more years to make our future brighter and better for every one of our citizens. I want to be your president for 4 more years to make our country safe.
The Republican message is going to be, these are dangerous times, and President Bush will protect you.
And, you know, this is life. This is what we should be doing, and taking it to whatever degree we have to take it to. Getting arrested is not such a big thing when people are dying.
If we are a representative democracy and we supposedly have control over our government, what are we going to do about it?
Attendance is estimated between 100,000 and 300,000 people, though no official figures have been released. Overall, the march, peaceful, except for some altercations. So far, police report 134 arrests.
2005, I went back for the first election, and I almost got killed a couple of times. I was only actually in the country for 10 days, and I didn't go back for a couple of years because I was terrified. I was caught in a crossfire shootout, and, you know, here I am, an unarmed American woman traveling, you know, with cameras. And I would think, I must have been crazy coming here and walking on these streets.
Every night at the hotel, darkness would come and you'd hear, like, the machine gun fire out in the street or handgun fire out in the street, or sometimes they were, like, fighting each other. I don't know what was going on. Everywhere we went, there were guns. You can hear, like, them clicking the guns in the background. They're loading them, checking their clips. There's nothing like the sound of a Kalashnikov being loaded.
It was kind of like, oh, attitude. You're not killing us today. And if you want to kill us, go ahead. Try. It was like, it was so intense. Like, gunfire broke out at one point, and no one left. Like, people refused to move, even though there was someone was shooting a gun at them. They told us, like, we went to the first polling place. They said, no, you cannot take any pictures of the National Guard or the police. So, yeah, I'm not going to break the rules. Soon, everybody wants me to take their picture. The policeman in charge, he said, here, take my picture. He took someone's kid. He was kissing the kid. He said, I want you to take my picture.
Now, remember, this last trip was very dangerous for me. I had to wear hijab the entire time and my abaya. My camera bag was a hidden woman's bag where I had, you know, and I had a press pass. I was even afraid to show that at times that someone would take me out. There were over 250 political parties. Here's the election ballot boxes. People came in, they voted. And that's the other thing. A lot of political parties suddenly come popping out of the woodwork, you know, because, oh, now we have democracy. Do we know what that means? Now we have freedom. Do we know what that means? I mean, it was a very beautiful, exciting time to see these people emerging from this snuffed-out dictatorship state to be just thinking about, now we're free. The first 3 weeks there, I didn't talk. I didn't write a word. I was too afraid to, because I had to get my mind on it. I had to wrap my mind around it, and I had to open to what they were saying and not what I was feeling, or not what I went there thinking.
No one is interested in the truth. So did I want to hear that half the people in Iraq were, you know, certainly large numbers of people love Bush? No, I didn't want to hear that.
We are no killers. We are no terrorists. We are just looking for peace and beautiful life.
So what do you think should happen now? I had two choices. I could have submerged myself and refused to hear them and to seek out people who supported my belief system, or I could listen to what they were saying and try to understand why they were saying it. And that's what I decided to do. And it was painful, and it was hard, and it was shocking to me. But the bottom line is, it's very complex. In fact, the first article I wrote was called Making Peace with All the Truths. It's not one truth. It's a multifaceted truth. And it may not make sense, and it's not black and white, and it's not right or wrong. It is complicated. But, you know, it doesn't fit into a sound bite, so we can't use it. And that's where I'm at. I don't know what I'm going to do. All I kept thinking the last 3 weeks I was there is I want to come home and plant my garden. Politics, the world, war.
Knowing what you know today, would you do the same thing all over again?
I think it is doubtful that without the weapons of mass destruction case, the President, the Congress, the United Nations, and those who joined us in the conflict, the British, the Italians, the Spanish, the Australians, would have found a persuasive enough case to support a decision to go to war.
I want our troops home. I want all this. I want all the children of the world home, and not in a war situation. Okay, but we can't get the troops home now because we've opened up Pandora's box, and people's lives are at risk. And it's about time. I mean, the left doesn't want to take responsibility for anything. The right doesn't want to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility. I have, as an American, I have to take responsibility in my country. And I'm not going to abandon these people who I have gotten to know and who are telling me we're afraid that if you guys leave, the shit's going to hit the fan.
You classify your work, journalism, as anti-mainstream or alternative.
I don't think they have a category for me in. I went to Iraq to bring home the face of the Iraqi people so that the people in my country could see who they were killing and maybe think, these are beautiful people, why would we want to kill them? Infantile idealism.
As a journalist, what are you going to do? Are you prepared for dying?
You can't go there unless you accept that you may not.
My name is Lorna Tychostop. I'm an editor, writer, and photojournalist. I've been working in and out of Iraq now since February 2003. I'm going to continue to name the names of the fallen from the state of New Mexico. Specialist Christopher A. Merville, age 26. Sergeant Moses Daniel Rocca, age 19.
The first time I read, the first 19-year-old, I had to like wait a whole minute because I didn't want to. You know, I had a
Private, first class, William C. Ramirez, age 19. Sergeant
Tommy L. Gray, age 34. Jaffer Hashim Majid, age 13. Wissam Hadi Duari, age 11. Daoud Kiss, age 55. Muhammad Agab, no age given. This is exactly where my photos belong, because people will see them. Ahmed Al Rifai, age 13. The face of the Iraqi people has found a home.
At some point, I realized I didn't know enough to truly report in depth on the issues that I was learning about. So I went back to school. I found a master's program at NYU in global affairs. And by that time, I had begun doing consulting work for an Iraqi NGO called Nature Iraq. Their work was to baseline the environmental conditions in the country while violence was still occurring. And I just thought that was phenomenal, and I chose that as my thesis topic. I graduated at the end of 2009, and shortly thereafter scored, you know, what I thought was my dream job, and working as a communications and outreach specialist for a USAID project in Baghdad. Their work had to do with training over 100,000 Iraqi civil servants in how to rebuild their country.
For nearly 9 years, our nation has been at war in Iraq. I'm proud to finally say these two words, and I know your families agree. Welcome home. Welcome home.
You know, my son called me a couple of days after 9/11 and said, hey, Mom, me and Mikey, we're going to sign up. We're going to go get them. And I was like, get who? As my, you know, heart stopped. And he said, we're going to get them, the people who did this. And I said, well, who did this? We don't know who did this. Who are you going to go get? Don't you think you should wait till we know who did this before you go get them? Sometimes I think I'm the one who went, so they wouldn't have to. Because I would rather be me than them. I think I put a lot of faces where people had friendly, happy, family faces to what people previously thought of as terrorists and scary and dark. And
think I was able to show a lot of people that, you know, we're not that much different. We all want basically the same things. We want a nice job so we can have a nice vacation. We want dinner on the table with our family at the end of the day. And we want to live in peace.
Lorna's haunting photographs and poignant stories enable her audience to share the tragedy, the struggle, the triumph of the Iraqi people. And they raise larger questions about the war that was never necessary, which could have been stopped if only the warmongering governments heard the voice of the people. And that's it, everyone, for this week on Aperture. Until another episode right here on Aperture, goodbye.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو إذا الرحمن Allah هو إذا المنان لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all the messengers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammadul Mustafa, and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program of questions and answers on the Islamic belief. I'm here, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, with my dear scholar, Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid, and welcome once again to our studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
One of the questions I have received, Sayyid, is about the qabr. How should we respond to one who denies the torment of the grave on the grounds that if he or she were to open a grave, he would not see any change or notice that it has been made constricted or widened? The grave has not been widened, expanded, or it has not been what? Squeezed. Is there any reasonable proof for that? So basically what we say about people and the squeezing of the grave and all of that, when I open that grave, I don't see anything special. That
physical.
The corpse is there, the grave is the same grave that I dug. What is the difference? Why do we say these things in the narrations?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first thing we need to remember is that when some examples are given or something that is very much tangible is said in the Quran, it is to make things tangible for the human beings. For example, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking about the rewards in the heaven, he is trying to make things tangible for us so that we can understand. Why? Because we are limited. Our mentality, our thinking is limited. The only entity that is unlimited is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, is God. Other than him, the rest are limited. That's first thing. The second thing is, when it is said that, for example, the grave will become one of the heavens, a garden becomes one of the gardens of the heaven, or one of the, we can say, the holes of the hell, it is to make tangible for us that after this process, obviously, after living in this world, when we die, when we pass away, basically this body is buried into the grave.
Right.
So that's why it is referred to the next world as a grave. Like, we refer to the next world as a grave.
So you're saying that the next realm,
yes,
the barzakhi realm, intermediate realm, is what we say the grave in the narrations. The grave is referring to the barzakh, to the intermediate realm.
Yes, and it is to make tangible for people. Because, you know, when someone passes away, we bury them. Okay.
Right.
The place where that body, that person is physically, that we can see, is that grave.
Right.
That's why they say this is the next realm. But actually, the next realm is for the soul.
Right.
For the nafs itself.
Right.
Not for that body which is buried over there. Obviously, this body has been eaten by the insects and the animals.
Right. It decays and then it becomes one with the nature. But it's the soul.
It's the actual soul, the realm of barzakh. It is the actual soul, because when the soul was coming to this world, Mullah Sadra also has mentioned his thoughts about this, that when the ruh or spirit is being given to this body, the time when the body starts making, like shaking,
to evolve,
to make shape, yeah,
to develop in the womb. Yeah.
And then that time is when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala attaches a spirit with it, a soul with it, and then it grows with that body. And when a person is passing away, that's the soul that is separating from the body.
Right.
And all the consequences, all the punishments are for the soul.
Right.
Now, the point is, in the narrations and in the Quran, sometimes it is said like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will punish them, and that is a physical punishment. So when we are talking about the physical punishment, and on the other hand, we are saying like it is the soul that is separating from the body, so what's that physical punishment? We cannot see that. There is the point where this confusion comes. Like, we can see this body when we dig this grave after, for example.
There are no bones. They're crushed.
Yes,
nothing has happened.
The point is when the soul...
But the soul is in torment.
When this soul is transferred to the next realm, it will have another body, which is according to that realm.
A barzakhi body, which we call mithali. Mithali, the imaginal body.
The imaginal body, that's what we refer to. Because we do not have seen that, because...
I just
want to
clarify for the dear listeners, Sayyid, and I like the way you differentiated between the nafs and the ruh. You call the nafs the soul, and you call the ruh for the spirit, which is very accurate in English. And then, just to add, to clarify for the dear listeners, when we say the imaginal body, the imaginal realm, which is the same as barzakh, it is different from imaginary. It is not something that you imagine, that it's imaginable, it's imaginary. No, imaginal, it's different from imaginary. That is one thing. Right. Go on, sir.
So basically, when this body is transferred to the next realm, it gets another body. And that is according to that realm.
And that body is spiritual. It is non-physical.
It's not
non-material.
It's not natural anymore, because it is not related to nature anymore.
Right.
The nature is up to this earth. This earth is nature. You know, when we go outside, we see natural scenes or nature. We see nature, which is clay, mud, water,
minerals.
All the specifications of a material.
But the barzakhi body or the barzakhi realm does not have those attributes and features.
Does not have those attributes, even when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will have, obviously, when we're going to have the the judgment day before that, all this, we can say like universe or the earth and the stars and the place where we are living, they will turn, they will all be destroyed, transformed from here to another realm, and they will become like cotton. Obviously, these are the verses of the Quran that I'm referring to. So basically, this earth is not the criteria. This grave is not the actual criteria.
So the soul is the one which is torment, which is being in torment, or which is enjoying happiness, and torment is both for the soul.
One more thing I want to answer here for our Muslim brothers, our Muslim brothers and sisters, and that is, you know, sometimes we say if someone was, for example, sinful, or he wasn't a good person, if he is buried at a specific place, his sins will be wiped off.
Right.
For example,
because of the barakah,
Because of the barakah of the person who's buried over there,
or
the land.
So
which
the
is
sins
there.
Will be erased for that person.
This is not the case, you know. When we are saying that it is the reward and the punishment is related to the soul and the spirit, then
to your
obviously
own self.
Yes, it's not about that specific place. Yet that specific place it
has
a barakah. There is no doubt, but that barakah will increase the reward, or maybe that is beneficial for those who are good, or who are muttaqi, for example. Not for those who have committed sin for their whole life, they were not good, and after that they
because
say
we
like...
we have some khulafa, some big ones, big shots in the Abbasid dynasty, one of the biggest of
Harun
the khulafa,
Harun
al-Rashid, which we even have the film, there is like a series of films about Harun al-Rashid in the Arabic language with English subtitles, and you see that even that person who oppressed the followers of Ahlul Bayt so much and tormented them and had a lot of other things, negative attributes, is buried besides
Imam
Ali al-Ridha.
Yes, he killed Imam Kadhim, father of Imam Ali Radha. He poisoned him.
Or the opposite. Yes. Imam Ali al-Ridha is buried beside Harun al-Rashid because of the will of Ma'mun. Right.
So this does not change anything.
Right.
Let me make this clear for our listeners. For example, we have in the Quran, there is a story in the Quran. And the story in the Quran says like, there was a prophet of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Hazrat Uzair, and he was passing from a place where he saw like the town is being destroyed and there was an adab. And he for a specific time, he just thought to himself that how Allah will make everything, like bring everything back. And then Allah made him sleep 400 years. And after that, he had his food next to him. He had his animal next to him, the donkey next to him. And after 100 years, when he woke up, Allah asked him, it is in the Quran, كَمْ لَبِثْتَ? How much time did you slept? He said, maybe half a day or more than that. Allah said, no, you slept 400 years. And after that, Allah said, look at your ta'amik, look at your food. 100 years Allah kept it fresh. And after that Allah said, look at your
donkey,
the animal,
it has decayed
and
you could
then
see the bones and the flesh, and
it was only bone over there
bones,
and then Allah
right.
subhanahu wa ta'ala put the flesh on the bones and then the skin and all those, and it became alive. So Allah said, we make things alive like this if we want. So the point is 100 years there was a prophet and there was the donkey didn't become the prophet, and the prophet didn't become the donkey. If the case when they say like if you're buried next to someone, maybe someone can become good, the donkey could become a human because of the barakah of the prophet, but not. It was like just the bones. It didn't remain even fresh or alive like the prophet. Allah kept his prophet alive.
So just to clarify for the listeners, the example that Sayyid came with, Nabi Uzair being a prophet of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, did not have any doubts when he thought those thoughts for a couple of seconds. It was about the kayfiyya, the how-ness. How will Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bring this into life? So it is no doubts in the asl, in the original thought, in the concept of ma'at. That the Prophet did not have, of course, any doubts. But he wanted to know the kayfiyya, the how-ness. All right, and if I ask, someone might ask a Sayyid that what is the difference between a spiritual, body and an imaginal or barzakhi body. There we should say that the barzakhi body has some features like form, color, shape, but it is non-physical. But the spiritual body does not have any of those features. It is completely non-material and does not have any form, color, shape. And that is the main difference.
Yes, that is.
It is like imagining your dream, basically. You see in your dream your mother, a stone, and a tree. And you can differentiate between those three. But those are not physical. Otherwise, your brain would explode. Your head would explode. But you can still know that there is a mother, there is a tree, there is fire, and there is a stone in your dream. And that is a metaphor to compare the Alam al-Barzakh.
We can also give the example of, you know, in the books we have Ilm Huduri and Husuli. With the Ilm Huduri, like the present knowledge, they generally
present
give
knowledge.
The present knowledge. For example, when someone feels hunger, we cannot see hunger. Okay, but you feel.
Could we
it.
Say the knowledge of presence?
The knowledge of presence.
Ilm
al-Huduri. Yes. Ilm al-Huduri,
the knowledge of presence.
Yes. The knowledge of presence. This thing you cannot see, you can just feel. And for the.
It's an intuition.
Ilm
al-Huduri, the knowledge of presence, is intuition, ilham.
Ilham.
Right.
Ahsan. And
you see the reality.
Also, for the barzakh, when we are in the next realm, which is barzakh, obviously that body is for that realm. After that, when we're going to be transferred to the Qiyamah, to the Day of Judgment, there will be another body over there, which will have the punishments and the rewards and all those
right.
things is for that.
And
so even
right.
in the time when we say the realm of the grave or the next realm that we have, or the barzakh, even that body which is in barzakh, which is mithali, will not continue after that because there is the next stage. For the next stage, for the third stage, there is another body.
Mm.
So these bodies are changing. So
depending
on the rule.
Right. Jazakallah khairan. Thank you very much. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us in this program of questions and answers on the Islamic belief. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of
you. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kHz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.